And here we go. This is the Get Clients Now Facilitator Forum. It's the 29th of January. I'm Chris, the Director of Training and Licensing at Get Clients Now. And we're with Jay, who is the intrepid author of this fabulous tome that we all love. Say hello.
Thanks.
And so today we're going to be chatting a little bit about common mistakes that participants use or do when they're using their Get Clients Now system, and how you can help them overcome those and work through those. And CJ and I, of course, have got some things to share with you, and there'll be plenty of times for questions as well as we move along. Logistically speaking, if this is your first time on Zoom, down at the bottom, there's a little panel where you can see where you can mute yourself or adjust your video, adjust your audio. And other than that, we like to just keep it open as much as we can. If there is some noise in your background, though, go ahead and hit the mute button. But we like to keep it open so we can all chat amongst ourselves. And this is recorded, and we'll send the recording out. Anything else, CJ? Would you like to introduce the topic?
Yes, I sure will. So we have a facilitation topic today. We'll be talking about common mistakes that participants make when using the Get Clients Now system. And this is because we as facilitators see some of the same misunderstandings about the Get Clients Now system come up in program after program. So we wanted to address with you some of the most common. Sometimes these misunderstandings are, well, understandable. There are people who have a difficult time with details in general, and grasping the nuances of the Get Clients Now system is harder for them because they don't have your familiarity with it. With these folks, sometimes straightening them out is just a matter of educating them about how certain parts of the system work. But other times people come into the program looking for or even expecting a silver bullet solution. So they set goals or they create action plans that are unrealistic. They may be expecting too much to happen in 28 days or maybe overestimating their ability to get things done. And then on the other side of the spectrum, there are people who come into the program who are just so resistant to marketing that they want to play it safe. And these folks will choose daily actions that just aren't going to get them where they want to go. So these are some of the kinds of things that we're going to address today to give you some ideas about how, what to look for and how you might interact with the people who present these different issues. We'll be talking about setting unrealistic goals, choosing success ingredients and main course items from more than one stage at a time, creating overly ambitious action plans, scoring weekly actions incorrectly, and confusing success ingredients and daily action items, as well as the misuse of appetizers. And of course, there'll be time for your questions as we go along. So that's our agenda. And Chris is going to start us off by talking about unrealistic goals.
Indeed. Yeah, I just got off the line with a couple of new clients who have just started a real estate brokerage. Andrea, you can probably relate to the real estate thing. And they are a little bit clueless about what a goal even is. They're like, well, I don't know, I just want to grow it and have a bunch of agents and stuff. Okay, awesome. And so that's pretty specific, as you can tell. And then, of course, we don't know how realistic that is. So when you're looking at setting realistic versus unrealistic goals, you really do need to be asking yourself, what am I trying to accomplish? And is it doable? I mean, when we look at our SMART criteria, that's one of the things: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and then time-based. So the relevant piece, you know, is this, or and realistic, some people call it. So if it's not realistic, if it's not meaningful to you, then already we're in trouble in terms of setting attainable goals. I'm sure we can all relate to that, right? Sort of like, I know, I'm just going to grow a real estate agency and we're just going to see how that grows, how it goes. So when our participants come into a program like Get Clients Now, I've seen it so many times. They're like, I just want to double my business. And I just read somebody's action plan a week ago that said the exact same thing. Grow my business by 50% was their goal. Okay, that doesn't mean anything, especially to me, because I don't know, there's nothing quantifiable there. More importantly, it doesn't mean anything to their subconscious, which is the part of your brain that you really want to be talking to at this point. Remember that your subconscious brain is like, your subconscious brain is like a computer. So if you don't program it very specifically, it's not going to produce the results that you want. So we need to tell it, what does 50% mean? So it's okay to have a ballpark thing that says, I'm going to grow my business by 50%. And yet if you don't have the quantifiable, and therefore that means I'm going to make $2,000 more, or I'm going to get 3 more clients, or I'm going to have 12 more billable whatevers, we don't have something like that in there, then there's nothing for your subconscious to grasp onto, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to program your subconscious to go after something extremely specific, which means you have to tell it. It's like computers back in the old days. I was talking with somebody just to reveal a little bit about my age. If you know anything about computers, I did a computer programming class in high school where they taught us how to program BASIC, which meant that we could put out like a puppy dog on the dot matrix printer, something like that. Yeah, I was pretty bad at it then. I'm pretty bad at it now. But, you don't put the right stuff in, you don't get the puppy dog out on the dot matrix printer, right? And CJ's laughing because I know she did that kind of stuff back in the day. This is the same part of your brain for the goals and all that stuff. So if you think about your brain like a computer, and you help your participants understand that their brain operates like a computer, then it makes it a lot clearer that we need to put something very specific in. So unrealistic goals, so that's specificity of it. Unrealistic in that if it's not specific enough, it ain't going to happen. And then unrealistic in like maybe it's too ambitious, or as CJ alluded to, maybe it's not ambitious enough. So if it's too ambitious, I've worked with a lot of folks that are like, I really need to set the bar high. And then, when I only get half of it, that's still okay. So what are you really telling your brain? You're really telling your brain, I'm only going to go for half of the thing I said, even though I said I was going to do this thing. I'm really only shooting for half of it. Even though you know you'd settle for half and you'd be happy with that, as soon as you've said that, your subconscious mind says, well, why would we go for the whole thing? We're just going to go for half if that's good enough. People like to use unrealistic goals as a way to pull them forward. In my experience, it tends not to pull people forward, though. It tends to make them feel discouraged, like, oh, I didn't do enough, or I can't get there. So this is, again, a distinction between your intellectual brain and your subconscious, which operates in a very much a bottom line, black or white, you can think of it like a 5-year-old kid kind of level. So intellectually, you might know, yes, that would be all right for me, and I'm still going to strive for the bigger thing. But as soon as you say anything less than that, your subconscious is all over it, and that's where the bar is set. Makes sense so far? Yeah. And yeah, thanks, Chris. So in the unrealistic, again, in the unrealistic department, if you undersell yourself, what have you really done? So we want the goal to be, we want it to be a bit of a stretch, but we don't want it to be so far of a stretch that it's disincentivizing. And we don't want it to be so close to what you're already doing now that it doesn't feel like you've done anything. This 28-day chunk of time is a little bit of it's like a sacred, precious time that you've set aside to go for something. So you want to make sure that you've preloaded it appropriately with something that's worth going for. And the other thing, it's not necessarily unrealistic per se, but if it's not motivating to the participant, if the goal that they've set isn't motivating, then that would be unrealistic too, from the sense that, again, why would they bother? So I love it when the goal, it feels magnetic, can pull you forward and towards it, it feels motivating in that way. And obviously it's very specific for your subconscious to wrap its mind around. Any questions or feedback about how that's worked for you or some of your participants? This goal setting thing is kind of the heart of the whole program. So if we don't get that nailed down pretty well, we're kind of in trouble.
I think what I'm finding is, I'm Andrea from Phoenix. I'm a realtor and I coach and train new realtors. Sometimes I think when I'm reviewing their activity logs, and I see some no's, it's like, okay, do we need to readjust this right now? You know, because sometimes they do get overwhelmed, but then it's like, how do you, you know, it's like keeping them on track, because some people, I guess I have my problem with the procrastinators, you know,
yes.
They're like, well, I don't think that's really realistic. And it's like, okay, how do you nudge that? You know, how do you nudge that to keep them on task or to, you know, okay, I'll give you a little bit here, but I think we need to focus more on this.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, damn those people who have their own brains. You know what I'm saying? Like, how are we? They have their own brains. So, sorry, just renaming John here so we can see who he is. The thing is, you do want to nudge them and you want to cajole them gently into thinking bigger for themselves. And that's where that other section of the Get Clients Now action worksheet can really come in handy, is helping them look for how to think bigger. And that includes the SMART goal. And the other thing about the unrealistic goal thing, and I'm sure we've all seen this, is that people like to do a compound goal. I want 3 corporate clients and 2 individual clients. Well, that's 2 goals. So that's 2 28-day chunks. That's not 1 28-day chunk, because your brain can't focus on both of those things, because you just told your computer brain to do 2 things at once, and now you've created a traffic jam in there. So Andrea, just chunking it down, helping them figure out what's realistic. And sometimes the procrastinators are just procrastinators, and sometimes they're procrastinating because they've crammed too much into their heads and they don't know which direction to turn. So you can kind of separate it out and make it simpler. Oftentimes that helps relieve some of the pressure. Other questions or comments about how this has worked for you?
I have a question based on what you just said, because sometimes people have 2 sides to their business.
Yeah.
And so like what I heard you say is, I want this and I want this.
Right.
Do you have people make 2 28-day plans? Do you say, don't make a clear plan on the other part? I mean, how do you approach that with people?
Defer. Deference is your friend here.
Yeah.
Do 1 for this 28-day chunk, and then you do the next one for the next 28-day chunk, if you want. You know, if you want to still do it after this 28 days is over. But you don't try to do them both at once, because a confused mind doesn't produce the results that you want. So we don't want to.
They need to be building both sides of their business.
Well, then they can't do it at once. We don't make the 7-layer dip all at once, right? Nobody would eat it if we put the guac and the sour cream and the beans all in there. It looks disgusting. Nobody would touch it. So you've got to layer each layer so that it looks nice and tidy.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you end up with your 7 layers. But if you try to build 7 layers at the same time, gross. And, oh, you're still muted, CJ. Yeah.
I love that metaphor. That's fabulous. Can we put that in the program somewhere as an official metaphor?
Exactly. Nobody wants to eat that. Dog's breakfast, my former boss used to call it. Yeah, which is even grosser. So definitely don't want to eat that. But yeah, Sherry, they can't, they really can't work on both at once. And I get what you're saying. So maybe in the success ingredient, there's something about building a foundational item. But in terms of going for a specific goal, we need to just work on 1 thing at a time, so that we can get some traction. And once it gets to a certain level, there is enough traction for them to turn their attention to the next thing. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I see people really messing themselves up if they don't pursue just 1 line enough, 1 focus enough, to the point where it gets solid enough that they can turn their attention to the other piece. So 1 product at a time, or 1 client, or 1 program, something very specific and small and chunkable like that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I have a quick question.
Sure, great. Hi, Jennifer. I'm glad you could come.
Hey, it's my first time on one of the
calls. Yeah, she's new. Yeah.
Hi, new facilitator. So as a new facilitator, this is more of a question about running the program. I have an opportunity to do it as a workshop, but they want it done online. And that's a long online workshop. Mm. So how do I maintain engagement during that 3 or 4 hour block? And what recommendation do you have that I give them before I even start the online program?
Right. Okay. Well, we actually have a whole open Q&A in 2 months where we can chat about that at further length, but I'll give you the really short answer now, which is that you want to chunk it down because otherwise people are going to get little X's in their eyes and start drooling. So the way I usually do it is 2 1.5 hour chunks as an intro. And then after that, 45 minute or 1 hour chunks. Yeah. I'm happy to chat with you more about that, either off on the email or, you know, next month or 2 months from now when we got the huge Q&A. But by then you'll probably be up to your eyeballs in the program already.
Your email will be filled with questions from me.
So CJ is going to tell us more about success ingredients versus main courses, talking about keeping it simple and making it so that our brains can do what we said they were going to do.
Great. And I do want to add something to what you were just saying that struck me as being particularly important about trying to convince people not to set these just like huge, unattainable goals to motivate themselves. I was reading an article just yesterday called The Neuroscience of Perseverance, and I'll put the link into chat so that anybody who's interested can read it after the session. And what this article talked about is that what keeps us going is dopamine. According to neuroscientists, we need dopamine to encourage us to keep going forward. And what produces dopamine, other than various chemical substances, is the experience of success.
Right.
So if you set a small goal and you achieve it, you get a little shot of dopamine, and that makes you want to keep going. But if you set a goal and don't achieve it, then you don't get that little shot of dopamine, and you tend to attribute the yucky feeling you're having to what you're doing instead of to the fact that you didn't achieve your goal and you can change that. So I would encourage anybody who feels like, how do I deal with that situation with people or with yourself, perhaps, of setting goals that are too high, read that article and see if maybe it changes your mind.
Well, and CJ, this is a great point to why you should reward yourself as you're going through the program.
Yeah.
Right. And just by the way, as a total aside, it's not on today's agenda, but the reward of going through the program is reward enough for me. Not happening. That is not true. Not does not count. Do not let people get away with that one.
Great. All right. So yeah, let's talk about participants who try and choose success ingredients and main course items from more than one stage at a time. So I've seen this often, that somebody's action plan will be just a collection of random stuff that they've pulled off the menu because it looked good to them. And I think that why people do this is really similar to how they end up setting unrealistic goals. Sometimes they're trying to use our system to cram in this to-do list of marketing projects and tasks, and they're really missing the value of focusing on a specific area of marketing and sales for 28 days. So we see this when participants just don't pay attention to our instruction to choose just one stage of the marketing cycle to focus on, or they don't understand why that's important and how the elements of the program work together. So if you see this when you're reviewing somebody's action worksheet or when they're reporting in on statistics, that they've chosen daily actions that are all over the place and not focused on a particular stage, you may need to find out if they found it hard to choose a stage because they feel as if they're stuck in multiple stages at once. If you ask them, where do you feel like your marketing is stuck? Where do you think it needs more work? And they say, well, I need help everywhere. You need to guide them, like the book says, to choose the first stage in the sequence. So if they're not sure, if they're stuck on following up or having conversations or closing sales, you tell them to focus on the first one in that sequence, which is following up. So what if they don't know or they aren't sure where they're stuck? Okay, we got an answer for that. You need to direct them to the checklist of questions that starts on page 39 in the third edition of the book, or if they have the ebook version, they can search for the heading of that section, which is choosing where to focus. And the questions in this section are really helpful when somebody's trying to do too many things to help them understand what they need to be looking at. So some of the filling the pipeline questions are you brand new in business? Or if you sat down to call every lead you currently have, would you be through before lunch? So you'll find people who say they're stuck everywhere, but when you ask them these questions, you'll find out things like they've got a drawer full of business cards or a phone full of numbers, but they don't know what to do with them. And by asking these questions, you can help them see whether they need to focus on follow-up instead of filling the pipeline, or whether having conversations is their real stuck place. If they're hesitant about choosing just one stage of the cycle, because they feel like the same thing people say when we tell them, choose a niche, right? I don't want to limit myself.
Yeah.
It can be helpful to point out that if they're willing to focus their Get Clients Now plan on just one area for the 28-day period, they will ultimately move through that stage to the other side in the next stage in the cycle. For example, if they're trying to decide between filling the pipeline and following up, if they start with filling the pipeline and they fix the problems there, they'll be ready for the follow-up stage. If they do that within the 28 days, they solve their stuck place, they can change their focus area, and they can then redo their program appropriately. So they really can't make a mistake. Questions, thoughts about that point?
I think the biggest problem that I've run into on that is that they tend to complicate the problem. So, you know, they say, well, I want more prospects. Mm-hmm. It's way too broad, and they don't break it down into the steps that are within the book.
That's right.
It's amazing how complicated you can make such a simple system.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we have to reinforce for them is, okay, the system works when you do all the steps in sequence, and if you don't do the steps in sequence, we're not going to tell you that you've got a system that's working, because this is the thing that people do that works for them. So follow the steps.
Yeah.
Good. Anybody else on this one? Great. Be on the lookout for that when you're reviewing people's action plans or when you hear them reporting in on stats.
Exactly.
So, Chris, you want to say some more about action plans and how to put the right level of ambition into them?
Well, it's sort of like those overly ambitious SMART goals that we were talking about a minute ago, right? It's when you go and pick your actions, it's easy to think that I'm going to do these 10 things, and I'm going to do them, you know, 10 times a week, and then all of a sudden you're halfway through week one, or you're all the way through week one, and you're exhausted. Well, that's because there's a level of starting friction, to be sure, and it's also because you probably chose too many of what you were trying to do. Remember that Rome wasn't built in a day, and your 7-layer dip wasn't built by throwing everything into the pan at once. So we want to make sure that we pick actions and goals and all that stuff that are going to be nice and like little building blocks that all kind of fit together, you know, like Legos or something like that. If we don't watch it, it's really easy. I see a lot of people overdoing the numbers of repetitions on their action plan. That's the main thing where I see people getting overly ambitious, aside from setting the wrong SMART goal and being too ambitious in that regard. So when you look at people's repetitions, if they're saying they're going to do something 5 days a week, if that's follow-up with that day's leads or something like that, maybe that's realistic. But if it's like, I'm going to go out and have coffee with somebody every day for 5 days, unless they're a real networker in that way, that may not be the right, that may not be the right sequence or the right level of engagement. So this is, yeah, my words are not working as well today. I'm going to put the coffee down. So it's really interesting to see people pick the wrong things and they put too many of those things, and then they wonder why it's not working. And then they don't, as CJ just said, get the dopamine hit and feel like they're really kind of on it in that way that you want them to feel. So overly ambitious plans to me means they feel like, kind of like what Sherry was alluding to, you know, I've got multiple parts of my business. You know, the people I just talked to, they want to grow this brokerage. They want three or four things within the brokerage that aren't normally inside of a real estate brokerage. They want all these agents and, you know, could we just get it all done by the end of the year at multiple locations? That's not all going to happen in 2019. That's just, I don't even know how that would happen in 1 year. And I often see people write their marketing plans, their action worksheets like that. Like, I have to get 10 clients by Tuesday or the business isn't going to work. Well, number one, that may or may not actually be the truth. So you want to help them separate the facts from the story. And number two, you know, even if they need those 10 clients by Tuesday, if they start grabbing stuff from wherever in the book or start making up their own, you know, actions, which they're allowed to do. But if they're making them up to the point where they're going to be all worn out and not be able to focus, then all of a sudden we've got ourselves a problem. So being overly ambitious, really, I feel like it's our job as the coach, facilitator, overseer in this way to help people go back to that relevant and realistic place. What is it you want in the big picture of your business? How do you want to chunk that down into this 28-day chunk so that you feel like if that's a big mountain, we've just taken one giant step, or maybe it's one baby step towards the bigger mountain. You know, the mountain being, this is what my business is all about. This is where I am now. What's going to be the next little thing I can do to make sure I go there? And if we do this 28 days at a time, you've seen how it works. At some point, it's not a linear progression. It becomes an exponential progression. You know, where the graph will actually go like that because you've gotten enough foundation laid and you've gotten enough clarity. I would say with the SMART goals and then again with this overly ambitious action plans, it's generally because there's not enough clarity about what they're after and there's too much monkey mind or that saboteur or that gremlin or whatever you want to call it in the back of your brain, that conversation that's chattering at them that's saying you're not doing enough, you're not going fast enough. You know, that very helpful voice that is always trying to get us to stop or do it differently. If we start listening to that voice, we're definitely in trouble now. So that's generally where these things come from. If there's an air of not expansion and not breathing, if there's no air in the room with the person or with looking at the plan, then you've strayed off the path. And it's probably overly ambitious and probably overly ambiguous. Some combination of the two. Any questions or comments about that? I know we've all seen those things and probably experienced it ourselves as well.
One of the things that I've found to be a little helpful in this area is to prioritize. If somebody insists with me they're going to do 10 things a day, I will often say, tell me which four you will get done before you do one of the next things.
Mm. Yeah. You know, I just started reading this book called The One Thing by Gary Keller from Keller Williams. I guess he's got a whole bunch of books out, but I stumbled across this one because I'm doing this whole how to be more productive myself. And this book crossed my path in terms of being more productive. And he said that he was running these global meetings. Yeah. Thank you, CJ. These global meetings and was asking people to list their to-dos and they were cranking through their to-do lists pretty well, getting most of the boxes checked off, but the company as a whole wasn't changing as a result of that. So then he's like, all right, let's chunk it down. Let's just do three or five, or forget which one. It was three or five things per week. And then people weren't getting them done as much. And again, the company wasn't really changing. So out of frustration, he said, can we all please just agree to do one thing per week and really boil it down? And as soon as he did that, the whole company shifted. Because if you're picking one thing, you have to focus on just one thing. And theoretically, you're going to pick the thing that you feel like is going to be more of the linchpin. So that's, again, when we look at this overly ambitious thing, less is more for the most part. You want the appropriate number of repetitions for that person's personality, for the marketing cycle, for the goal, but you don't want it to the point where they're disincentivized and exhausted. Any other thoughts about that before we shift gears? Yeah, because CJ now is going to tell us about scoring. And I know that is one of the things that I see people doing incorrectly or getting all flummoxed about, disproportionately above a lot of other things. This is like the greatest hits of what people do poorly. I can't unmute.
I got it. Yes. Okay, good. When I first came up with the Get Clients Now system, the last thing I expected was that people were going to get all tangled up on this whole idea of weekly actions. But yeah. Boy, do they. So the idea of there being weekly actions to begin with is because some things aren't appropriate to do every single day. So if you want to choose an action like follow up with my prospects, it can be completely appropriate to say follow up with one prospect a day or follow up with five prospects a day, depending on how full your pipeline is. But if you want to go to a networking mixer, I'm not going to tell anybody to do that five times every single day. That's crazy to go to five networking mixers in 1 week. So it makes much more sense to say go to a networking mixer a week. And that's just one example of the kind of things that might be a weekly activity. But then how do you score that? Because we want people to score themselves on everything that's in their list every single day so that they can say, I did 3 out of 10, or I did 7 out of 10, or I did all 10, whatever. We don't want to penalize people for having a weekly action on there that they can't do every single day. So what that means is if they've said, I'm going to do this thing once a week, or it could be twice a week or three times a week, on the days that they don't do it, but they intended not to do it, they get to give themselves a free why. And this...
Oh my, oh my.
A free why. And
wait
for
a
lot of people, this is a real problem, the free why. Okay? So the way it works is just like this. Let's say you've picked, I'm going to go to a networking event once a week. I want you to go to your calendar at the beginning of the week and decide when are you going to do that. I'm going to do that on Wednesday. Okay, great. So Monday, you've got it on your calendar for Wednesday, free why. Tuesday, you've got it on your calendar for Wednesday, free why. Wednesday comes. If you go, you get a why. If you don't go, you get an N. If you can reschedule for Thursday or Friday, great. You can get a why on one of those days. If you can't reschedule because that was your only chance, you get an N for the rest of the week. So those free whys are counteracted now by some real ends. So that's the way that the scoring works. It's all about what you intend, what you plan, and are you following through on what you plan? Let's say it's not a scheduled thing like a networking event where you have to look at a calendar and say, okay, this one makes sense to go to and it's on Wednesday. Let's say it's something like once a week, I will approach an organization about being a speaker for them. That could happen any day of the week, all right? In the best of all possible worlds, you're going to look at your calendar at the beginning of the week and say, when am I going to do this? And you're going to put it on your calendar or your to-do list or however you keep track of things you're going to do on a particular day. Many of us don't do that, me included a lot of times. That's okay, as long as it gets done by the end of the week. But until you do it, you can give yourself a free why up until Friday, right? If you don't do it on Friday, that's an N because you haven't done it all week long. That's how the scoring works. It's that straightforward. So for people who get all tangled up in it, have them read the explanation in the book. If they don't get it from the explanation in the book, ask them, what's the challenge for you here? What's the problem? And see if you can help them to sort out what it is about that scoring that's causing them difficulty.
It's cheating.
The free why. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely cheating.
Yeah. I find people who react that way all the time, as well as people who say, but if I was supposed to do it Monday and I didn't do it Monday, you mean I have to get an N for the whole week? And the answer is no, if you could do it on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. But if you can't, that's right. You chose weekly action. If you can't do it for the entire week, that's an N for the entire week. Questions, thoughts about that one?
Are you saying they would go back and change their whys to N's or the whys they got? If the intention was there, they can keep their whys, correct?
If the intention was there, they did the right thing that day.
Right.
They had the intention on Monday. They get to keep their why. Intention on Tuesday, they get to keep their why. Only on starting on Wednesday, when they didn't follow through, do they start giving themselves ends.
Right.
Clear enough to everybody? Good. Good. Well, I look forward to hearing that you've been able to help people untangle that tangle.
One of the things I've seen people do is make a little spreadsheet where they tally the percentages done, and then that helps them untangle that. I don't know if that feels like it might be cheating too.
It doesn't feel like cheating if it's a big enough item that they can actually inch it along rather than get it all done at one time.
Right.
Well, good. So, Andrea.
I've had people, you know, that I have said, you know, on Monday or Tuesday, if they're going to a networking event, you know, look for the networking event. You know, I mean, did you find one? Are you still looking for one? You know, I mean, so, yeah, it's even working for that weekly visit or finding somebody to go to lunch with or, you know. So they'll give themselves a no, but then I'll ask about that, and then I'll tell them that. So why? You get your why. So
good. That's right. Yeah, that's good, Andrea. Okay, great. So, Chris, let's talk about something related, but another big area of confusion, confusing success ingredients and daily actions.
Yeah, one of my favorite things. I see it so often. And it doesn't seem like it should be that hard, but when you've probably seen it, when people are putting together their action worksheet, sometimes what you end up with is like a month-long to-do list. So number one, your daily actions obviously are not a month-long to-do list. It's got to be something you can do multiple times per week, at least once per week, or it doesn't belong in the daily action section. Daily actions are verbs. It's an action. It's something you're going to go do, something that anybody else in physical reality could walk by and see you doing that thing and go, that person is clearly taking an action. That's the kind of stuff that belongs in that daily action section. And if you remember, the daily actions have three distinct portions. There's the success ingredients, which are more related to, the appetizers, which are more related to your success ingredients and the foundation of your business. There's the dessert, which is more related to you taking care of yourself as the golden goose. And that leaves 7 or 8 items as a direct straight line to that SMART goal that we were talking about a minute ago. What I see, though, is that people mix and match. They abuse their appetizers. They give themselves several desserts because who doesn't want that? And, you know, and then when they look at their daily actions, they don't have as much time and space for the things that would actually help them achieve their 28-day goal, which means then if they don't modify, if you don't catch it, or somehow they end up with this type of a program, they're trying to run it. And sometimes people who have worked on the program without a facilitator come to me, they're like, I could never get it working. This is usually why, because they made it more like a to-do list type of thing. Or they just willy-nilly picked daily actions that don't relate, like CJ was saying, picking from wrong parts of the marketing cycle or the menu. So that's often what happens. Anyway, the daily actions have to be the bulk of it, the 7 or 8, have to be a straight line to your immediate SMART goal. Otherwise, you're not setting yourself up for success. I feel like the confusion comes in that the success ingredients are more about the foundation of your business and the bigger picture of your business. They're not necessarily, probably in a lot of ways, not related to your immediate 28-day goal. Because if you have to achieve your success ingredients in order for your goal to be achieved, then you're going to have to do your success ingredients within the first couple days or no more than the first week of the program, or you're definitely not going to be able to make it work. So I don't recommend that people have a goal that's dependent on any of their success ingredients if they can swing that. Or the success ingredient has to be accomplished within, I usually only give them 3 days because I'm a little bit of a hard nose in that way. You know, if you can figure this out in the first 3 or 4 days of your program and you can use it for the next 3.5 weeks, okay. But if you can't, then we're not going to count it this time. So I want the success ingredients to be very much bigger picture related. Like if you don't have business cards or a website or your tagline or your niche or your speaking venues or your networking venues or any of the other things, your confidence level, building your own personal skills, your own trainings, if you don't have that kind of stuff in place, then the big picture of your business is not really going to be addressed adequately for the long haul. That makes these success ingredients projects. They have a due date, which may or may not fall within the 28-day timeline. And that's something else where people get a little tangled up. It's okay to have a success ingredients ingredient that is already in process that you would maybe finish. Or if it's something that's a longer project, like a website or something like that, that's going to take longer than 28 days for the most part. So your goal for that section would be to just have it 25% done by the program's end. So what people do is they tend to mix and match these daily actions, these daily like SMART goal type, very specific check off the box type actions with these projects. And then that's where we end up with that to-do list looking thing. And again, when we put it in that format, your brain doesn't know what you're asking of it. And it doesn't have a good chance of getting anything done. So I tend to think of success ingredients very specifically as something that's the foundation of your business. The daily actions are the nuts and bolts of how you're going to get your 28-day goal, with the exception of these two line items that help you look at the bigger picture and that one line item that helps you look at the picture of taking care of you. And when I tend to explain it that way, I know a couple of you were on that class I did last year about the action worksheet and how to fill it out adequately. I like to draw little arrows between, here's the program goal right here. So I like to draw a little arrow from the program goal right down here. And then I like to draw a little picture between what's that going to get you in the big picture of your business right down here to our success ingredients. And so when you tend to link the action worksheet in these different ways, people tend to understand what we're talking about better. Even though CJ's laid it all out in the book, for whatever reason, it gets all tangly in people's heads. I don't know, we're human, I guess. Seems to be. Any questions about this success ingredient versus daily action thing? And there's actually an article in the blog about it too that I wrote to help clarify it a little bit more. You had trouble with your participants running into that kind of thing too, or I see it a lot where they end up with projects on their daily action list. And I also see it where they pick more than 3 success ingredients, which you're not allowed to do. Only 3 at once. We're not building our 7-layer dip, more than 1 layer at a time. Yeah. Cool. Which leads us to this last piece, which is the appetizers. So misusing your appetizers, it's sort of like giving yourself dessert first, and who doesn't want to eat 3 desserts? But if you have 5 appetizers and you're just getting ready to get ready, then it's not going to work either. Right, CJ?
No, it is not. And, you know, I think that where people need to be told to look around this whole question is the definition of what an appetizer really is. So what is an appetizer? Okay, so here on the action worksheet, right, when you get down to the daily action section, you get to pick 10 items, and at the beginning you have 1 or 2 appetizers, and then 7 or 8 main course items, and then the last thing is a dessert. And the appetizers have one purpose, and one purpose only, and that is to help you complete your success ingredients. They are not a way to try to sneak in additional projects or tasks to the program. Right. And what you're not supposed to do is just randomly choose something off the list that looks good that doesn't have anything to do with the rest of your program. So when you choose an appetizer item like spend an hour each day on my success ingredient project, right? That's really clear. It's tied to completing the success ingredients. It's about blocking out a specific time to work on those things. It's giving you the juice of being able to check off that why every day on the daily actions because you're working on your success ingredient. So that's a perfectly good one for people to grab anytime. But sometimes they'll take on an appetizer, spend an hour a week doing research. Doing research on what? Well, doing research on what my target market wants. Okay, what success ingredient is that related to? Oh, well, that's not related to one of my success ingredients, but it's something else I really need. Wrong answer. It needs to be related to a success ingredient, or it's by definition not an appropriate appetizer. And it's a way that people sabotage themselves by just trying to once again to make that plan more ambitious than realistically it should be. If you're going to do 7 or 8 daily actions, and maybe your dessert too is a thing about doing, right? Like maybe a half hour of meditation or something like that, then all of a sudden that plus your success ingredient projects, that is a whole lot of doing to shoehorn into what's already probably a pretty full life. So using an appetizer to just slip in 1 or 2 more things is not going to help them. But using an appetizer to set aside time or to make a daily goal, that's going to help them. It's very helpful when they've got an intangible goal that's about increasing skills, for example, to have that set aside time. Practice my skills or script once per day, right? Or observe how it's done once a week, which could be in person, it could be on YouTube, whatever. Those are the kinds of things that can help them concretize how to get their heads around and their arms around an intangible success ingredient that they're going to be building over time. But if what you see is, and again, something to look for when you review an action worksheet or listen for when you hear somebody talking about their stats, is what success ingredient project is that related to? And that's the question you want to ask them if you don't understand that. And if they can't name a success ingredient, it goes. It gets replaced with something else. Or maybe there's a 4th or a 5th success ingredient that they want to add to their action plan. Okay, remember what the rule about that is? You get to have 4 or 5, but you can only work on 3 at once. So they have to finish one of those 3 because before they can add in those 4th or 5th ones. So questions or thoughts about this potential misusing of appetizer items?
I do see people shoehorning more actions in, even with the dessert. It's, you know, it's like if we're trying to train for a marathon, if you train every single day, 8 hours a day, you're going to overtrain and you're going to wear yourself out. You can't, you know, we need other things in there as well. We need our rest days. We need our days where they have a different type of focus. It all adds up to the delicious dip that we're all looking forward to eating as soon as we get off the line here.
And that's backed up by science too, that for example, with the training situation, right? If you're training to run a marathon, if you're training to lift weights, if you're training to do a bicycle trip, you need to have the rest time for your muscles to actually build. If you don't take the rest time in between, you are completely sabotaging yourself because you're not getting in that rest time that your body actually needs in order to develop in the way that you want it to develop. So all of the elements of the program have a reason. And, you know, that's actually something I wanted to say overall about this topic, that I wasn't sure where it might fit. We're giving participants a structure for them to put their marketing together. And it's a structure that's worked for thousands of people. But since everyone is different, people will use the program in a whole lot of different ways. So when somebody obviously is not paying attention to the rules and what they're doing has been pointed out to them, but they're resistant or they just want to do it their own way, sometimes that's what they need to do in order to figure it out. You call it to their attention. You tell them you're doing this differently than the way I've seen it work for other people. But if somebody really wants to misuse the program elements to create some completely unique and different marketing plan, great if it's working. And if it's not working, you need to point that out to them and they need to go back to the drawing board and follow the guidelines the way that we set them up.
I call that get clients now-ish.
Yes, exactly.
I've seen it a lot.
Great. So that's all I have on that topic.
Yes. Yes. This reminds me, you know, I'm always telling my clients, use your superpowers for good, not for evil. And that's kind of what we're talking about with this daily action, you know, filling out our action worksheet. There are some rules and guidelines, and even for people like me that don't like a lot of rules and guidelines, these ones are pretty simple and pretty broad. And if you stick with them, you can still develop a really nice program without feeling hemmed in. Leaning into the structure as a way to move forward instead of rebelling against it. Yeah. Cool. Any last minute questions or comments about this overall, about the overall topic that we've been chatting about?
No, this is helpful. It's helpful. Yeah, it's great.
What are you taking away, Chris?
Well, I want to read that article you talked about, the dopamine and the experience of success. That's really interesting.
Isn't it? That,
the more little successes you have creates more dopamine, which it's just this closed loop.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. Plus some other things, but that's the thing that sticks out the most.
Actually, in coaching school, they taught us not to answer questions for our clients and let them have their own ahas, because what happens is the coach can hijack someone else's dopamine hit and get the dopamine hit themselves and not let them.
Because I remember being taught that also, Chris, and it was a huge aha for me to realize that by giving a client advice or direction, sometimes you are just... You're doing it to give yourself the juice and not them.
Exactly. I know. It's counterintuitive.
It is.
It's Ruth here. Can I actually ask a question of one of the facilitators who spoke earlier?
Yeah.
I believe it's, is it Andrea who's in the real estate industry?
Yes.
Hi, Andrea. Just a quick question for you. I became a facilitator last year, but I've only this month really started actively marketing my service. And I've been reaching out to organizations because that's the route I'm preferring to go. So I've been reaching out to real estate brokerages, and I've not been getting really great results with that. So I was hoping maybe you could give some insight into or any tips on, you know, how to best... I think my approach is okay. I'm calling, I'm getting the contact information, I'm doing the follow-up, but any tips on maybe what would make a brokerage, you know, find the program more appealing for their agents to, you know, be willing to share it with them or book me in to do a program?
Yeah. Ruth, let me just interrupt you real fast. Can you two do a little private chat and exchange phone numbers and emails?
Oh, sure. Okay, sure.
Yeah, and you can use the chat feature on here.
Sure.
And same for everybody. I mean, we like it when the facilitators get a chance to chat with each other, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And I'm glad you asked. And again, remember that in March, we're going to have an open Q&A. And so that's a place where we'll be able to talk a little bit more freely without so many time constraints about all the different topics.
Okay.
Cool. Which leads us to the next facilitator forum, which is an open Q&A. It's in March. It's on the 26th. And in the Pacific time zone where I and CJ are, that's 11 o'clock. It's going to be 2 o'clock Eastern and then 6 o'clock for those of you in London. Total open Q&A, bring all of your questions and curiosities. We'll just talk amongst ourselves. The conversations always end up being pretty interesting because we have a lot of cross-pollination and just a chance for us to all hang out and ask questions like what Jennifer did, like how do I organize this in a way that's going to make it so that people can stick with me for that amount of time, all of that. So without further ado, my dog is going to bark because it's our Tuesday alarm, which is...
It's Tuesday at noon and the sirens are going off. That's when they test them here in our town.
CJ and I both live right next to a siren tower on opposite sides of town. So we both have a siren tower right practically outside. That's when we know it's time to wrap up for the day. Thank you all for coming. It's great to see everybody. We'll be sending the recording out. If you've got questions, you can always hit reply to that or email me personally because I know you have your email address. Other than that, we'll see you again in March. And thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.